Today on Maine Calling, a new tribute to Martha Ballard. Maybe you first learned about Martha Ballard from the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, A Midwife's Tale, or the PBS documentary that followed. Maybe you are one of the legions of fans of the best-selling historical novel, The Frozen River, which is based on Ballard's story. More than 200 years since her death, Martha Ballard continues to fascinate and inspire. And now, a new monument will be dedicated to her near her home in Augusta. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we learn more about the compelling life of midwife and healer Martha Ballard. She delivered more than 800 babies in the Augusta-Hollowell area in the late 1700s and early 1800s. Her diary gave historians a rare look at the lives of women on the colonial frontier. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. This Wednesday in Augusta, after years of planning, a new monument will be unveiled that celebrates the life of Martha Ballard. Ballard was a midwife and healer who lived in the late 1700s and early 1800s. And most importantly, she kept a diary, which has proved to be a remarkable treasure for historians. Today, we're going to learn more about the life of Martha Ballard. My guests have all been involved in creating the new monument. Larry Fleury is Mayor's Chairperson of the Martha Ballard Memorial Committee. Glee Ballard, as you might be able to guess from the name, is the seventh great-granddaughter of Martha Ballard. And Joe Owen is former president and current board member of the Kennebec Historical Society. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you know and what do you want to know about Martha Ballard? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you and congratulations. Joe, I'm going to start with you. Set this up for us. Tell us what the Augusta Hollowell area was like in the late 1700s and what Martha Ballard was doing during that time and why it was so remarkable.
Well, Martha Ballard arrived here in the midst of the Revolutionary War. So it was pretty chaotic. And in many ways, it was every bit as much a frontier region as the Western United States was in the late 1800s. People didn't have modern conveniences then. This is before the Industrial Revolution. There were problems with indigenous people and there were problems had just recently been problems with French. So it was in the middle of settlement at the time that she arrived. The fort, that's Old Fort Western, was built in 1754, which is two decades before she arrived, to provide protection against the French who had been encroaching on the English at the time. And it later became the center of commerce and social life for the community. At that time, Augusta was part of Hollowell. It hadn't broken away yet. And it was in what was then called Lincoln County instead of Kennebec, because that county wasn't formed until 1799. And it was part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts instead of Maine, which it later became. Martha Ballard had nine children. Eight of them were born in her hometown in Oxford, Massachusetts. Three died during an epidemic there before she ever moved to Maine. And then in 1775, her husband came up here looking for property, and she followed him soon after with the remainder of her kids. The final child was born here in Maine under arduous circumstances, considering the fact that it was a frontier area. One of the things that's remarkable about her is that she acquired such a long resume of delivering babies. She, I believe the total number was 800 16 over the course of the 27 years that she kept her diary. And there are undoubtedly many, many more that did not go recorded because we don't have a diary for the periods when she was working in her early days. She died in 1812, just as another war was Britain was breaking out. Life had changed quite a bit, but it was still pre-industrial. She managed to get a grip on all kinds of different facets of life in this diary, and we would know very little about it if it weren't for the fact that key people at key points managed to preserve it and then bring it to the attention of the public, especially with the publication of the book A Midwife's Tale, which was written by University of New Hampshire professor Laurel Thatcher Ulrich, published in 1990, and won the Pulitzer Prize and became the basis of a documentary. Mm.
And so we were fortunate enough to have Laurel Thatcher Ulrich on Maine Calling several years ago, and she talked about deciphering the diary because Martha Ballard used sort of shorthand in her own little codes for a lot of things. So it was really a remarkable feat to bring that diary to life. But let me ask you, it's remarkable enough that Martha Ballard delivered more than 800 babies, and I understand never lost a mother. But also, it was not usual for women to be literate in that era.
That's true. And some who look at her diary might wonder whether she was literate, because there are lots of spellings and absence of punctuation. But we have to remember that writing was not her primary reason for being. It was she was a healer and a midwife, and those were her focus activities. But she managed to capture the character of her time. She learned a lot about local politics, about dealing with all the various levels of society. She told us about herbal remedies, about gardening, about natural disasters, the difficulty of crossing the ice in the river in the middle of winter, or more dangerously, in late fall and early spring when she had to jump from one piece of ice to another sometimes, and she often fell in. She took her life in her hands. She risked her life to save people. And that makes it all the more remarkable.
Glee Ballard, at what point in your life did you learn about your seventh great-grandmother, Martha Ballard, and what a remarkable woman she was? Was it not until the publication of the diary, or had there been stories handed down through the family?
No, my grandmother lived on the homestead of Ephraim. Strangely enough, the lineage of Ephraim, which is Martha's husband, went Ephraim, Jonathan, Ephraim, Jonathan, Ephraim. Now, that last Ephraim is my great-grandfather, and I am sitting on that farm as we speak. So I knew about it. Strangely enough, my grandmother was a Dudley, which came from a very prominent family, the first one being the first governor of Massachusetts, blah, blah, blah. But she lived and died for Martha. My grandmother was an RN nurse. So as early as I can remember, we would eat lunch with Grammy Ballard, and many times it was Martha, Martha, Martha. Now, she didn't know all the stuff that we all know now, but she was in awe of her as a woman, as a nurse, as a healer, as a mother, as a forging the country in the new place without any, you know, real help. And so I heard Martha's stories like I heard fairy tales, on and on and on. And then I grew up and went off and I lived in Manhattan, and that never thought that much about Martha until Laura Ehrlich's book came out and they had a theater presentation with Laura speaking about the book. And I was invited and my sister was invited, and we went, and it was a regular New York City night out in the theater, a whole theater full of people. And that was a reintroduction to me of who Martha was. And she fit the profile of the women in my family. The women dominated a lot. I do too, like it or not. And so mother was a frontier woman who went out there and took it on. I mean, morning, noon, and night, healing, traipsing, going, doing, fighting with people about how she felt and what was important to her. Even to the point, for a while, she wouldn't even go to her beloved church because she was mad at them. So, I mean, she definitely was a warrior. And that is something that I can relate, having grown up with a lot of warriors.
I'd like to jump in if I could.
Yeah, Larry, I was going to turn to you next. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not trying to take away from Glee, but I want to say that Glee herself is a warrior. Glee ran the Copacabana in Manhattan for over 40 years. She's a remarkable woman. I think she gets that tenaciousness from Martha at some point. It's in her blood.
Well, Larry, I wanted to turn to you next. Why you are the chairperson of the mayor's committee to make this monument, this new memorial to Martha Ballard happen, and it has been years in the works. Why has this been so important to you?
Well, you know, I did a lot of downtown revitalization many years ago, and I had retired, probably a year or so into my retirement. I live along Bond Brook where Martha, I'm about 1,000 feet from where she lived at Jones Mill. And my mother told me stories about how she would skate along Bond Brook when she was a child, and they would have lit fires along the frozen ice. And I like to go through this little thing in my mind where I think of each property going up and the context of that. And, you know, Martha came up in my thoughts, and I'm going, geez, you know, it's like we've forgotten about Martha one more time. The book came out, there was a big thing. The movie came out, there was an even bigger thing, and that went international. And then there's this lull for years. And I thought we need to do something permanent. And so I did get in touch with the mayor and contacted the Ballard family, and we moved on from there.
Hmm. Joe, I know Larry has mentioned that he lives near where Martha's home was. So Martha's home does not exist anymore, but many of the houses do. And I know that people can kind of do a little bit of a walk and visit places where she delivered a child, or where a certain character in the diary lived. Tell us about that. Tell us about how real history can be if you're thinking about Martha Ballard and walking around what is now Hallowell, or what is now Augusta, what was Hallowell.
Although she did go farther afield to other communities, including what is now Hallowell. I think it's probably fair to say that most of the buildings that stood in this area at the time Martha Ballard was doing her work do not exist any longer. The oldest building in Augusta is Fort Western. That was built in 1754. The next oldest one probably is 30 years newer than that, having been built just about the time that Martha started writing her diary. And it's way up towards Sydney, not in the area where she lived. There are a few other structures that are still standing. For the most part, I think it's more the landscape that evokes the memory of her, especially the place that Larry just mentioned, which is right next to his house, the point at which Bond Brook flows into the Kennebec River on the west side of the river. Larry also probably should have mentioned that when he looks out his window across the brook, he will be able to see that monument right out his window.
Oh, Larry, that's wonderful.
That's why I'm having it put there.
So describe to someone who doesn't know Augusta well, Larry, the unveiling is, I understand, Wednesday at 5:30, and then somebody can visit it at any time. Larry, describe to someone how to find where this monument, this memorial will be.
Okay, so, if you're in the heart of the city and you're downtown, head north. And it'll be at 1 Northern Avenue in Augusta this Wednesday, August 19th at 5:30 p.m. The statue will be 12 feet high. It's it'll be quite a vision sitting right there in really quite a prominent spot. But even the whole state of Maine, the site overlooking that is incredible. The brook, the river, Martha's great grandson oversaw the building of the arched stone bridge right there adjacent to the site. It's a beautiful, beautiful site. We're very fortunate that Earl Kingsbury from the Parks and Recreation Department really pushed it forward that we could have the monument there.
And before we go to our first break, I need to ask you, Glee, what it means to you that this is finally happening.
It's been a long and continuous journey, and I have found out so much more about Martha than I ever would have known. One point I want to make when it comes to where Martha went, I grew up on Bond Brook, much further up the brook than where Martha was. And they always talked about this freshet that took everything out. And I remember understanding what that was. So that was always a big focus of my grandmother. Like, what do you mean it took the house and it did this and it did that? And right there where I grew up is a mill that was a grist mill. And Martha definitely went to that mill. And that mill definitely is still standing. So that's one place I know that she went. And she went there and I played there as a child. So we stepped on that same territory for sure.
Yeah, just
remarkable. Used to swim in the brook, didn't you?
I did when my mother wasn't looking. Okay. She was for sure thinking we were going to drown. And just to make it more so, the sewer went into the brook when I was a kid.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't like full of stuff, but it definitely was, you know, not recommended. But it was a running stream, still is. And we jumped the rocks and waded in it. It wasn't the kind of brook that we jumped in over our head, but we played in it nonstop, much to my mother's dismay and telling us we were going to drown.
Well, we're talking about the legacy of midwife and healer Martha Ballard. We need to take a quick break. What do you want to know about Martha Ballard? What does she mean to you? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're talking about a new memorial to Martha Ballard. With me, Joe Owen, who is former president and current board member of the Kennebec Historical Society, Glee Ballard, seventh great-granddaughter of Martha Ballard, and Larry Fleury, mayor's chairperson of the Martha Ballard Memorial Committee. You can join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Dr. Barbara Moss, who is a family medicine doctor at Maine General. Dr. Moss, I understand that you have been focused on an herb garden that's part of this park. Tell us about that.
Hello. Thank you, Jennifer. I am happy to help with the idea of Martha's herbs, the ones that she used. And thanks to Laurel Thatcher's work, we have quotes from Martha about certain herbs that she used, and that's what we have focused on in the garden, about 12 herbs. We have some signs that indicate quotes from Laurel's work about how Martha used these herbs. And so it's both an educational opportunity and just sort of an homage to the work that Martha did in healing in her community.
It's so interesting because I'm guessing you don't use a lot of herbs in your medicine today, but I'm wondering what it means to you to be sort of handling these herbs when medicine was practiced in such a different way.
Well, actually, at the Maine Dartmouth Family Medicine Residency, we're one of the forerunners in participating with the Andrew Weil Integrative Medicine Residency program. And so we have a strong focus on other ways of looking at healing. As an osteopathic physician, I appreciate that many times there are other approaches that aren't, you know, fully utilized. And so, in fact, today, as I was working with the doctors in training as a preceptor, I was able to discuss uses of let's say, an oatmeal bath for someone who has itchy skin, or uses of different kinds of herbal preparations for certain conditions. So I think it's not that we see it as in contrast to, but an alternative way of approaching it. And so I think so many of these herbs that she speaks about, we still use today.
Oh, tell us about one or two, if you can.
Sure. I'm just looking through the list. Well, calendula is often one, again, used for skin preparations. It's in many of these sort of salves that people will use for eczema, let's say. Of course, I'm not getting any medical advice over the phone here. But you know, again, these were things that she used. Chamomile is another one that will often be used in teas for people to help calm, or as a nerving, that people say in the herbal world, to help go to sleep. So if you were to look at some sleep teas, you might find that in there. It's interesting that many of the herbs that we'll use just in our cooking often had some antimicrobial properties. So some of the herbs that summer savory, sage, mustard, these are in the herb garden that Larry has invited me to participate with. Thank you, Larry. And so we have included some of those. And so we'll have some signage there for people to look at. Hopefully it will stand the test of time, and hopefully there'll be some ways that people can enter more deeply into this life of a person that in many ways did exactly what we're trying to do in family medicine, the sort of continuity of care, caring for a community, and standing up to the forces around to kind of do the right thing. That's how we see ourselves in family medicine.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Dr. Barbara Moss, a family medicine doctor at Maine General, who is also involved in planting the medicinal herb garden at the Martha Ballard Memorial. We'll move on now to Major General Diane Dunn. General Dunn commands the Maine National Guard and is Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. She is also 8th great-granddaughter of Martha Ballard. General Dunn, that is such a fun connection. I've known you for years, and I never knew that.
Yeah, well, good morning, and thank you so much. Yes, it's an amazing honor to be, you know, even distantly connected to such an amazing human.
Were you, like Glee, did you grow up learning, hearing stories about Martha Ballard?
Yes, and visiting Glee's parents, my great-grandparents, right there on Roaring Brook, and so being familiar, and then now living in the area and driving by every day. So just like some of your other callers, Larry and others, getting to see many of those historical places, and was just receiving some care at the Ballard Center just last week. And so the connections are, you know, even now, very important in my life.
Okay, so it's not lost on me that both you and Martha Ballard are quite accomplished and competent. Glee said earlier on the program that the women in the Ballard family are warriors, is the word that either Glee or Larry used. Do you think that you inherited her gene for determination?
I think all of us did. And, you know, that's something Glee and Ruth and I talk about. I marvel at the strength of my grandmother and, you know, how we truly, truly understand and know that strength comes from, you know, many of the Ballard women down through the years.
What does this new memorial like mean to you? Oh, okay, Larry wants to jump in.
Right,
go
there.
Ahead.
So, I think it runs in the blood quite deeply because Clara Barton founded the Red Cross. Clara Barton, Martha Ballard was the great aunt of Clara Barton. I mean, this thing, it runs in the Ballard family.
It sounds like it runs on the certain, the female gene, though, the X chromosome. Diane,
yes.
Diane, before we let you go, tell us what this memorial means to you.
Well, I'm just so grateful for so many people that have dedicated so many years you know, Larry and others making this come to fruition. I'm so excited to see it all there and being able to be right here in the local community and visit it frequently and then be able to pass on those traditions and share those memories with my children and grandchildren and many, many more generations to come.
Well, Major General Diane Dunn, thank you so much for taking time to call in today, and congratulations.
Thank you, Diane.
Yeah, we'll see you. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joe, go ahead.
Bye.
I wanted to point out that there's another woman in the Ballard family who's worth mentioning, and if it weren't for her, we wouldn't probably be having this conversation. And her name is Mary Forrester Hobart. She's a great-great-granddaughter of Martha Ballard. The diaries were preserved after Martha's death and passed down through generations of women. And they finally ended up in Hobart's hands. She became a physician who specialized in obstetrics and therefore participated in the births of many, many people herself. She was in practice for more than 30 years. She lived in Boston. She practiced in Boston, then later retired to Needham. And in 1930, when she was well into retirement, she donated the original diaries that had been bound together by her ancestors to the Maine State Library. That's why we know what is in them, because when Thatcher Ulrich found them there about a half century later, she was able to have them interpreted and use them as the basis for her book.
We'll go to Sarah, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Sarah Dawson, and I grew up in a house in Hollowell that was built in 1780. And when I read that book, Frozen River, I was really thinking about how Martha might have been in our house, which would have been really interesting. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about her work in Hollowell. Right around the corner from us was Page Street, which is where I assume Dr. Page lived, which is a doctor in the book. And he also has his office. I think it must have been moved, but they put it in a parking lot across from the Hubbard Free Library. So I'm just wondering, what do you know? What can you tell us about her time in Hollowell?
Glee, do you want to answer?
Well, it took me some time to figure it out because they keep talking about Hollowell. And of course, we live here in Augusta and we think of Hollowell as Hollowell. The bottom line is that Hollowell was where Augusta is now. There wasn't an Augusta, there was just a Hollowell. So the three houses that Martha lived in were not in Hollowell as we know Hollowell. They were all in the Augusta area. And but I'm sure she traveled down there where these other people were, because remember, it was just all one settlement. And then later it became separated out to Augusta and Hollowell.
Well, I'm guessing too, Glee, that if Sarah's house she grew up in was built in 1780, chances are Martha was there because there were not a lot of houses back then.
She probably went to what we call Hollowell now. I would imagine she, because she traveled quite far with her duties of healing the sick and burying the dead and doing all that important work for the area. There was her doing it by foot, horseback, canoe, however she could get there. Morning, noon, and middle of the night, she would go.
Joe?
And it was after 50 years old. And at that time, 50 years old was old. And that's when she did most of her really hard work.
She also traveled for reasons other than helping to care for people. At that time, the center of the judicial system in this area was at the Pownalboro Courthouse, now located in the town of Dresden, about maybe 20 miles downstream on the river. And she went there to attend a trial of Judge North when he was accused of rape. So she went quite a distance away, but only in the context of traveling up and down the valley.
Sarah, thanks for calling in. We'll go now. We'll go
down. Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
So she alluded to reading The Frozen River, and I just want to be really clear that that is a work of fiction with a lot of real stuff sewn in, but it really is a work of fiction, and I have not read it on purpose. It's sitting on my kitchen island for me to read after we do the dedication on Wednesday. So if you really want to get to know
really
the book.
It's a really good read.
No, I know. Everybody says it is. And but I would really strongly suggest, if you want the real picture of who Martha was, read A Midwife's Tale first, and then go read The Frozen River, because everybody wants me to read it. So, yes, I agree.
That's good advice, Larry.
We'll go to Elizabeth calling from Portland. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Elizabeth, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for honoring Martha Billard. There are so many incredible women that were born here or came here and really committed and devoted themselves to caring for other people. And Martha Billard really influenced me when I read her book. I was so amazed at how incredible her endurance was, because back then you didn't have Gore-Tex or all these high-end clothing. I mean, they had severe winters. All the rivers froze over, but there were so many deaths and so many hardships. And this woman just never stopped. She prevailed and continued to, for the benefit of all these people. And for her to have taken the time to write all this, and then now you've all shared it, I'm so grateful. I live in a 1700 home, and I'm an herbalist. And I just think of these women that just went out there, and nobody knows about them. A lot of times, they're not in the school books. There's nothing about that. So to have a statue, I'm coming up for that. I'm so
thank you.
Thrilled.
Can I jump in on that, please? So
yeah.
I think it's remarkable that you mentioned the word sharing. And I think the process of, it's been slow and sometimes painful, of putting the monument and the little end of the park together. It took 6 years, but it allowed us time to share her story. We've gotten so much press, so much attention. I mean, teas at the Blaine House in her honor, events in the park, events at Fort Western. And it's been this like slow drib and drab, and it's allowed the community to get to know her. And I think the final icing on the cake was that gave it relevance is The Frozen River. And that is a bit of a fictitious novel, but it was one more spotlight, and even this show. Thank you.
Elizabeth, thanks for
not read that, but I probably will, because my family comes from loggers up north, and they ran the logs down the rivers, and there was a lot of hardship there as well.
Yeah, Elizabeth, thank you so much. Glee, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to say that when Martha died, and there only was one line in the newspaper that said, Martha Ballard, consort of Ephraim Ballard, has died. That was it. So for 200 years, it pretty much stayed like that. And then look what happened as a result of it coming to life. I mean, it's just absolutely taken off, you know, for quite a while now, you know, getting hot and cold, but still maintaining its importance. And really, Martha Ballard was what we call an influencer. She, by delivering these 800 babies and writing about it and having it live right to this day, those babies who populated this area in the beginning and made life go on and on and on, very few people could say that they had done such with and carried through the nights and the cold weather and everything else to produce 800 lives that God knows how many lives those lives have produced. So when they said that she was the consort of Ephraim Ballard and that was it, somehow something up there said, I don't think so.
I love it. We are talking about midwife and healer Martha Ballard. A new memorial to her will be unveiled Wednesday evening in Augusta. What are your questions or comments about the life and influence of Martha Ballard? The phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are learning about Martha Ballard, a memorial to Martha Ballard going to be unveiled Wednesday. My guests were all part of the committee that made this happen. Joe Owen, former president and current board member of the Kennebec Historical Society, Glee Ballard, seventh great-granddaughter of Martha Ballard, and Larry Fleury, mayor's chairperson of the Martha Ballard Memorial Committee. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joe Owen, you wanted to jump in before the break, and I wouldn't let you. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to add something to what Glee said about the rather terse announcement of Martha Ballard's death in 1812. There were some mentions of her before.
Ooh, something very strange is happening to your audio, Joe. Try that again. Go ahead.
I said there were two prominent mentions of Martha Ballard that occurred after her death, but events conspired against her in both cases. We have had two histories of Augusta written. The first was published in 1870. It was written by James North. And he didn't think very much of Martha Ballard. He spent about a little over a page describing what she wrote in a book that was almost 800 pages long. And he concluded that, quote, "The records are brief and with some exceptions, not of general interest." So that didn't really inspire any enthusiasm among the reading public. About 30 years later, Charles Nash, a former mayor, also wrote a history of Augusta, and he included 236 pages of typed excerpts from the Ballard Diary. That constituted more than a third of his book. The problem was that he died in the middle of the preparation of the book for publication, and it never saw the light of day in that era. It wasn't until 1961 that a state librarian, Edith Harry, arranged for the publication of his book in hardcover, and it was published, but in a very small number, a much smaller number of copies than might have been the case had Nash been able to bring his project to fruition. So we had to wait until the Laurel Thatcher Ulrich book came out before she really got the recognition that she deserved.
An email here from Kathy to add some public information about other tributes to Martha Ballard that will be taking place this fall. Connie Hansen has arranged a tea at the Blaine House on September 17th to honor Martha Ballard. Nurse midwives Linda Robinson and Kathy Beach will give a short talk about Martha's legacy. The same nurse midwives, Linda Robinson and Kathy Beach, will give a talk at the Common Ground Fair on September 25th at 11 a.m., again, talking about the incredible work that Martha Ballard did for women and families in the Augusta area. An email from Kevin. Did Ms. Ballard ever discuss how she managed patient care when the pregnant mother-to-be lived quite a long way or time from where Ms. Ballard could assist in the birth of a newborn? Certainly must have been a challenge then, as it is now. What can we learn from her practice in this regard? So great question, Kevin. Glee, is this a question you feel like you can answer?
Well, I know they wrote a lot about her going off to deliver a baby that didn't come for days. And so, and there were some that, you know, were born dead, and some of them were, the mother died too. So during all that 800 babies that came out alive, there were also others that didn't. But proportionately, she's, in today's world, they consider her work to be of normal, good result, that she had a very successful time delivering these babies. And when the doctors came to, one quick story, when the doctors came to town, they fought with her like she wasn't qualified or necessary or important or whatever. Yeah, when Dr. Coney's wife, I believe it was him, he tried to get that baby out, and drugged her up, and it didn't come out, of course. Who did he call? Martha. So that kind of gave her her importance. I also want to make mention, you know, about the importance of Larry's work, because Martha has come to life in this area because of Larry's work. Now, the it might have happened in a different way at a different time with the books and stuff, but he's absolutely given this area the pride of knowing Martha.
We'll go to Sharon calling from Bangor. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. I read the book about 20 years ago, and I still have it. But something that came out in my mind from the book that I never forgot was some of the culture of the time. Stories of her making linen from flax in her spare time, and her trying to walk up the hill to the meeting house when she was older and there was so much snow. There was so many little bits and pieces in there about the culture of the time, and also how the doctors were so opposed to what she did. Oh, it's the most amazing book.
Sharon, thank you for bringing that up. And Joe, that is part of why this diary is such a revelation, right? It wasn't just about the midwifery, which was very important, but it gave us this window into what a regular life was like back then. Because, you know, historians often write about wars and battles and great adventures, but about what it was like to live in Augusta in the late 1700s. We know that now because of this diary.
We do, and we also know what it was like to die because of this diary. Martha Ballard offered competition to lots of other professionals. She had an ongoing competition with a doctor who didn't think highly of her skills, but she also acted as an undertaker. She would wash bodies in preparation for burial and clothe them accordingly. I would imagine that today we'd call her a jack of all trades in that sense. I mean, given that and all the things that she did with clothing and with gardening. The diary might be reflecting everyday life, but she was far from an everyday person.
Sharon, thank you for your call.
It should be recognized that Martha's survival rate for childbirth was not surpassed until the mid-1930s. It was much higher than all of the local doctors, the men. So this is why the local people had her come to their homes and deliver their babies. There was a huge trust factor in Martha's abilities. And I would think that as a paid medical professional, like a doctor in that time, it was certainly to their chagrin.
An email here from Heidi. I am a recently retired midwife who practiced in Western Maine for the past 40 years. I've attended around 1,000 births in person in people's homes and a small birth center during that time. There are still births being attended by midwives who practice in people's homes quite similarly to Martha. And we owe this passing to knowledge. We know this passing of knowledge to Martha and other midwives who have practiced through history. I remember coming to Augusta in 1990 to see Laurel Ulrich speak about her newly released book, A Midwife's Tale, and being so enthralled with this glimpse into this midwife's life 200 years prior. She was one of many women who attended their neighbors' births in Maine until the medical profession developed and doctors displaced midwives. But she was unique in that she kept a diary, which has allowed us a rare peek into the life of women, and particularly midwives at that time. I am curious whether anybody knows about any other documentation of midwives who practiced in Maine in the past 200 years. So do any of you know? I'll turn to you, Joe, since you're the historian of the bunch.
I'm going to draw a blank on it. Certainly not around here. There may have been some elsewhere.
Okay.
Well, the Maine Midwives Association would certainly be able to put you in touch. I think if you reached out to them, you would get all of those stories. We haven't dug into that, but there's certainly a rich tapestry of that here in Maine.
We'll go to Don calling from Winslow. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just had to make a couple of comments. I read both of those books. I read the first one, of course, the autobiography, The Midwife's Tale, many, many years ago. And then I read the second one, you know, when it came out. And as a librarian for many years, I have pushed the first book into people's hands so many times. And then when the second book came out, I said, well, please don't read that one until you read the original one. And also, I had my first child in rural Pennsylvania, and I had a midwife, which was unthinkable back then. You know, you had babies in hospitals, and don't be ridiculous. So, so I know what an uphill battle it was for midwiveries. But the last comment I wanted to make was Glee's accent as a misplaced New Yorker and now living in Maine for many years. I love her accent. It's very similar to mine.
I've only been back 6 years.
That's enough to pick just up the Maine accent.
Just in time to do this project.
Yeah, welcome home, Glee.
Well, she lives, just so everybody knows, Glee lives on her, I believe, great-grandfather's farm, and she has a small house next door to it, and her sister runs the farm, and she lives next door. It's a remarkable horse farm where, you know, they have the riding stable, the whole nine yards. It's quite a beautiful piece of land.
I want to ask you.
At one time, we were birthing babies, but they had four legs.
Oh my gosh. Well, Don, thank you for your call. I want to ask you all, the monument includes a statue, and it's got to have been interesting to try to figure out how to depict Martha Ballard, because obviously no photographs of her, but not even any drawings. How did you decide, Larry, was that up to you to figure out how Martha Ballard would be depicted?
Well, you know, we sat with probably five or six different metal artists, sculptors, and we found the process tedious, expensive, and we kept mulling it over. And we went through the pandemic. We canceled the meetings. Then we started having them back outside. And it was at one of these meetings that I think Glee was just getting, you know, her patience was running out. And I couldn't blame her because we had so many meetings. And she brought this little statue about 4 feet high, and it was a whimsical garden statue. And she goes, what do you think of this? And I went, what do you mean? But and it took me a while to wrap my mind around it. But now, looking back, the concept is beautiful. So her dress is actually a trellis, and that's going to be about 4 or 5 feet high. Then her body will sit on that, and this is all constructed of aluminum and welded, and so she'll be holding a baby, and the bust itself was done by the artist who put the conceptualized it for us, and he did the drawings upon what we requested of him and Glee's thoughts and ideas on it. And so his name is Stan Tupper. He's from South Carolina. He's a lawyer and artist. And he was born in Augusta, Maine. And his grandfather was Congressman Stan Tupper of Augusta, Maine. So mm-hmm. We tried to keep it all pretty local. The bust itself, after Stan put it together, was shipped to Augusta, Maine, a clay bust. We had it shipped to Green Foundry in Elliott, Maine, poured. And now J.B. Welding is putting the whole thing together. I'm actually going out this afternoon to take a peek at it. And they're almost done, and they're going to put it in place probably tomorrow night at some time.
All right. We just have a few seconds left. Tom, I'm going to try to squeeze you in. Tom calling from Portland. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I was calling. I had read and greatly enjoyed The Midwife's Tale. Martha Ballard was a great observer also of other incidents of within the town. And one of the most shocking was her neighbor, an immediate neighbor, was Captain James Purington, a man who was married and had quite a family, about seven children. And for some unknown reason, he was very unbalanced. And one day he killed his entire, well, almost his entire family.
Tom, I have to stop you because we're out of time, but it is one of the many amazing stories in A Midwife's Tale. And I have to ask all of you, or just say to all of you, thank you for being on the show today and congratulations. Larry Fleury, Mayor's Chairperson of the Martha Ballard Memorial Committee, Glee Ballard, seventh great granddaughter of Martha Ballard, and Joe Owen with Kennebec Historical Society. Today's sound engineer is Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Public Radio.